Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Abraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Joanne Wong, international and acclaimed technology leader, Network Academy Manager, Cisco Canada. Joanne, you have a remarkable background with so many outstanding achievements and a broad history of success. Thank you for sharing your talent and wisdom with our audience.
I thank you for inviting me, and it's a pleasure to be here, and also I'm honored to be here, too.
So what sparked your initial interest in computers?
I think it was going through college and university here is that I did take computer courses, and back then it was Fortran programming, and I loved the programming and because it gave me the ability to create and solve a problem, and then you got to see the results at the end. But I have to admit that programming, I just realized, wasn't for me. I needed something that was more complex, and in my final year of engineering, I took a course where we ended up building microprocessors for automatic processing. And that combined the hardware and the software, and it just added more complexity. So the more complex, it's more challenging, and it's just more fun. And then graduating from McGill, I got hired by IBM as a manufacturing engineer, so that was just the start of starting my fantastic IT career.
So that's amazing. You actually built microprocessors.
In a way, yes. It's probably very simplistic back then to what we have today, but the beauty of working at IBM, I saw how computers were built from the chip level all the way to the mainframes. And from a hardware perspective, it just opened the eyes of the possibilities of what's there.
You know, something that I come across is you know, when I interview different people, is that, you know, you're an outstanding leader, an outstanding professional, but you're also a woman, and that must have been interesting because isn't there sort of a shortage of women, and even so at that time?
Very much so. There was. I remember when I was hired at the IBM plant in Bromont, Quebec here, I believe I was the second or third woman engineer hired by IBM there at the plant. And IBM has always been very progressive, and I think they have a very high percentage of women engineers working for them today. And yes, even today, I would have to say there's not enough women in IT or in engineering, and it's always. But when you're going through the engineering courses, you don't realize that, and you just go and do it.
Well, I think your fellow students were lucky. So, can you share more about your earlier experience with McGill and some key lessons, like life lessons that you learned at that time?
At McGill, the part that I really liked at McGill was that it wasn't just learning about the technical aspects, because that you do learn as an engineer, like all the technical courses in engineering. But it was also about teamwork, about doing projects with your peers. And so it was working, I guess it sets you off for today's world of collaboration, working together. But we were also taught by engineers working in the field. So it wasn't just the university professor, so it was not just academics, but it also brought the real-life experience to the studies. And consequently, from this type of education, we learned to succeed, you not only needed your technical knowledge, but also excellent communication skills. And that engineering is not just theoretical, but also practical, so you have to think and develop many solutions, and there's always more than one way to solve problems. But even when you solve the problem, you have to be able to communicate that well to the people in the communities around you. And that's, I think, the best experience I got at McGill.
I see. So you're kind of talking about sort of the what I call the beta attributes, which is business and core industry skills, but there's also the user experience, the customer experience, but project management and communications capabilities and relationship capabilities.
Right, very much so. Like obviously, when you start as an engineer working in industry, you do start at the technical level because that's where your background is from. But as you grow as an individual, you will grow your technical skills, but also along as a professional, you also grow all those other aspects that's necessary to succeed in not just in your career.
In fact, probably it's even more important to have the communications, relationship, and user experience skills, and even the technical side, ultimately, if you want to progress it to the higher level.
Oh, yes, very much so. I think you hit it right on the spot.
Well, what career tips do you, or I should say, did you learn from your time at each of the following, that is IBM, DEC, SAP, and SHL?
Probably some of the top ones I would have to say is understand who your customers are. And that doesn't necessarily mean just your external customers if you're working in sales or in a sales office environment, but also if you're working in a plant facility, is that your customers can be internal or external, internal within your organization, and you always treat the customers the way you would like to be treated. So the key importance is respect of others is a key to success, because you cannot work in a silo. You can't work by yourself. You need others to work with you to make a project successful. And the other part from a technology perspective is you have to understand the business and to be able to convey that effectively on how and why technology can help business. And successful technology implementations are, I would say, directly related to communication skills of the people involved in the team to drive the project, whether that be the business users or the technical team. So I guess bottom line is respect of others and being able to convey technical terms in a business fashion.
You know, if we can sort of go on to a sort of a side question on this, then do you have any sort of topic achievements at that time in terms of the problems you were solving or, you know, their solutions and the impact it has today and into the future?
Well, let's say back then when I was working, let's say, at Digital, one of, let's say, the new software coming up, and now it's probably just something that's of a standard, enterprise resource planning, ERP solutions, of which SAP, Oracle sells today. Back then, it wasn't very well known, so everything was in silos. So you have a financial software, you had a manufacturing software, you had process control software, human resources, everybody was segregated. And one of the parts that I love working there, even though I worked from a hardware perspective at Digital and also later on a consultant role at System House, was the fact that working as a consultant, you have to be able to have this vision, a high-level view of looking at the business and how software and hardware can solve business issues of getting people to work together so not everyone is in silo and throwing, let's say, hey, it's not no longer my problem. I'll just pass it on to the other guy and just let them figure it out later. But from an efficiency point of view, it's not the best way of doing it. So software, let's say from enterprise resource planning, it forces people to work together. And as you're implementing that type of software, you also have to realize don't force it down people's throat, is that you also have to work with people to make them realize the benefit of why this works well.
Well, you know, it seems like it always comes down to these sort of basic principles, you know, collaboration, teamwork, but also communications, tying to the business side, business value, return on investments, all of those kinds of things.
Right.
You know, you have this interesting history, so McGill, IBM, DEC, SAP, SHL, and then you get involved with Cisco. So what motivated you to get into Cisco and then to start the Network Academy program? In fact, let me back up here. What even motivated Cisco then to start this program more than 10 years ago?
Well, let's say what got me involved, and I think it's also one of reasons of why Cisco got involved in Networking Academy, is this return back to the community. It's what can I do more to help others? And I don't know if it's the nurturing side of the women, but hey, I love doing what I'm doing. And the Networking Academy is really is Cisco's return back to the community because it's their corporate social responsibility program. And how they got started 10 years ago is that they realized that just simply donating Networking Academy to schools was not enough, is that people needed the knowledge of how networking worked. And so Cisco, being innovative and taking advantage of the Internet, they built online courses. So, and teaching students how to design, build, and maintain networks. And interestingly enough, back in when this course started in the 90s, is that these first students were maintaining that networks in their schools. Obviously, now over time, the networks have gotten more complicated, and they're more helpers than being the network administrators of their schools. So the courses were and still are instructor-led. It's web-based. You've got interactive tools, hands-on labs. And I guess from the engineering side of me that I like this is not just learning the theory, but there's also a practical experience so that the students get to apply the knowledge that they learned and to put it into real life experience. And I think the best example, I know one of the labs the students do is that you have a network up and then the teacher takes it down and they time them how long it takes them to bring it back up. So it comes back to all the troubleshooting, problem solving. And that comes back to, let's say, the part that I like is from my personal background from the engineering side is there's always more than one way of solving a problem. And it's not black and white as sometimes it is in mathematics. And so And the students really learn and put their knowledge to practice. So this is just great.
So how did you get involved with Cisco then?
It comes down to personal networking because my colleagues that I used to work with at Digital was working at Cisco, and they knew they were looking, and so they gave me a buzz and said, hey, would you be interested in this? And that's how I got involved. So it's called keeping up your network alive, and consequently, you never know what can happen in the end. And this is how I got the job at Cisco.
So again, back to relationships.
It's back to relationship. And also back to respect of others, because obviously they like what I did, and I also respected them. They respected me. So it's treating people well.
Right. A good user experience for everybody.
Right.
Now, you know, you talked about this great program, the Cisco program, and the Network Academy, you know, sort of process and what happened more than 10 years ago now. Can you overview the current state of the Network Academy program and then its Canadian component and global reach?
Right. Well, right now, Network Academy has been around for just a bit over 10 years right now. It's established in over 160 countries with about over 9,000 schools around the world. The majority of them are post-secondary schools, and we right now have about over 750,000 students taking Network Academy courses. And Cisco has invested more than $350 million U.S. into the development and maintenance of Network Academy. And now if we look at it from a Canadian perspective, right now we have about, we have over 230 schools with over 16,000 students. Of that, one-third of those students, probably about 5,000 students, are from high school, and the over 10,000 are from colleges and universities. And one of the best parts I find from Canada perspective is that we have high schools and post-secondaries, is that there are pathways that have been built between high schools and the colleges and universities so that a student who takes a Networking Academy course in high school, they get their high school credit, but they would also get a post-secondary credit if they want to continue their career or their courses in the IT programs.
I see. And then do you also have some students who are at the World Skills competition, which is going to be, what, in early September?
Yes, actually, World Skills will be next week. And there will be students from Networking Academy, our graduates who will be participating in World Skills. And I believe the last one that was in Japan 2 years ago, I believe the winner of the IT and PC network competition was a Networking Academy grad.
Wow, that's amazing. So,
and also on another point, the Canadian World Skills, the Canadian, the Skills Canada winner who participated in World Skills is a Networking Academy grad from Cégep Limoilou in Quebec City. And I believe he came in fourth place.
Wow, that's a remarkable
from a world film. Perspective. And the points are so tight, it's just like the Olympics. And I think that he lost by 0.04 of a point or something of that sort.
Wow, that's amazing.
For making it to the podium.
That's amazing. So now, you know, we have the World Skills Contest here in Calgary, and
right.
Team Canada, and I guess you're going to be there, right?
Yes, we will. Because we're one of the founding, Cisco is one of the founding sponsors of World Skills. And so we will have a booth there, and we encourage people attending World Skills to come and see us because we'll show our technology and use, and also explain more about Networking Academy and how we've been involved with the skills competition, not just in Canada but around the world.
So, you know, working together, then how can we ensure the success of students?
The way I look at it, to ensure the success of students, we have to ensure that the teachers have all the necessary resources to make the students successful. So Network Academy just provides one part of that because Network Academy gives the online curriculum updates for free and all the associated tools such as online assessments, labs, online communities. But we also have to think of other ways to help teachers and students. What else can we do to help them out? And some of these could be mentorships, access to relevant work experience, giving that industry insightfulness. And hopefully by working with you, Cuminus, and other organizations, we need to reach out to IT professionals to help with the future IT generation. So it's asking for people to give back to the community and to work with the teachers so that the students get that industry insightfulness.
You know, I look at your history and all the things that you've done and the corporations you've worked for and the amazing effect and impact and contribution that you've had over the many years. Can you tell us more about your vision and objectives behind your current role?
Right now, I look at, let's say, how can I facilitate collaboration, not just from a Canadian level, but on a global basis, so that technology education is accessible and interesting. So it's just not books and doing labs, but how do we make the students of today, or the IT, let's say, students of the future, to make them, how do we build that from what's already been there? So I look at Networking Academy as provides a foundation. Now, how do we add on to that foundation? And especially in today's global economy, IT is everywhere, and it's not just techie companies, but it's also in healthcare, finance, entertainment, government, transportation, everything. And so today's students are tech savvy. They know how to use technology. Now we need to go with them steps further and get them more interested in how to design and build the next technology innovations that can be used in many types of organization and by individuals everywhere. So it's really looking at, we're in Canada, Networking Academy, how do we extend that realm to other parts of the world? And I'll give you an example, is that in the next month, we're going to be connecting Canadian Networking Academy students with Academy students in Afghanistan. And what we want that to happen, we're just a facilitator, but to get the collaboration and using the tools that Cisco has, is to get the students to say, okay, how do we maximize the use of technology to change the world? So they have to be open to work with others elsewhere to adapt to the environment around them. But it's for them to come up with the ideas, what can we do to make this world a better place using technology?
So what do you hope to accomplish overall, and how will you bring this about?
Let's say if we take the example of Afghanistan, it's one, to make the students realize, I'd say, that how lucky they are in the world, in the Western world where we're living today, and what kind of impact can they make with someone in Afghanistan or another part that's not as privileged as us in the Western world, and what kind of ideas, and the ideas have to come from the students. It shouldn't be initiated from us in the IT field, because it's the youth that will be driving the future, and is to get them to think out of the box, and what that can lead to, hopefully a better world.
Now, we're going to step back a bit here and look at sort of IT professionals that are out there in the audience, and you've been around, you are constantly keeping up to date in terms of what are the best things that are out there to look at, the best resources and so forth. So then what would be your recommendations as to the best job resources for IT professionals?
The best job resources, I look at it, is their present and past colleagues, the people they've been working with, so that they need to network, reach out to others, and find out where that those hidden gem jobs they would like would be. So, and that could be joining professional organizations such as Qminist, KIPS, or IEEE. But it's not just joining, but it's also actively engaging. So it's not just to pay a membership. It's to say, hey, I want to make a difference. What can I do to work with others? And that's probably the best way of finding other jobs, because the jobs is usually done word of mouth.
So how does your professional status as an engineer support your work?
I never looked at the professional status. It could give me that credibility of being a problem solver. I always looked at my background as an engineer and what that, let's say my McGill University training, whatever, my studies at McGill, what that gave me. It gave me the logical thinking process of how to solve problems. You always got to think out of the box, and you got to look at all different ways of, or possibilities to resolve problems. So when you're working with educators or business leaders, and you're presented with a certain problem, you have to think of all possible solutions and what each solution can bring, what is the best solution depending on the circumstances by working with the business leaders and educators.
I guess you are also a member of the Quebec Order of Engineers.
Yes, very much so.
So, you know, we've been through an economic recession for a while now. So what are your suggestions for managing the economic challenges?
Well, as an IT worker, I look at that you always have to keep yourself updated from a technical knowledge and make yourself more valuable to yourself and also to your organization. But you also have to be cognizant of the economy and your surroundings and changes that are happening around you from a people, political perspective. You got to keep abreast of what's happening in the business world and changes. So it's overall to be on top of every constant changing environment.
And how do you manage change?
Well, you have to like change to manage it, and that's why I like working in IT, because change is a constant, and you just got to go with the flow and be on top of things.
So I guess the key is not to be afraid of it.
Oh, never. You have to embrace it.
We talked about this before. You're out there, you're talking about the value of relationships. So what are the best ways for making connections?
I look at it, it's basic, it's attitude. You got to be positive, keep a smile on your face, but it really comes down to attitude, attitude, attitude. And by that, people just gravitate to someone who's outgoing and have a positive outlook on life.
Well, that's definitely you. I was just amazed at the academic conferences there, and you're just out there and you're engaging with everybody. You got that smile on your face, and people are laughing and smiling with you. So,
Thank you very much.
now we already talked about this before, but can you talk more about women in technology?
There's not enough women technology. So we got to figure out how to get girls to see the benefits of technology and how technology makes the world a better place to live. We got to figure out what's discouraging girls from going to technology science or or science engineering courses. And we get like girls are tech savvy. They know how to use iPods. They know how to download music. They know how to use the cell phones, all the features, the photo cameras, everything of that sort. So they're just, I look at them, they're looking from the outside in, but they got to be part of the solution. So not to just be the users of technology, but also get them to be the creators of technology. So hopefully by working with you and Cumulus, we can figure out how do we entice more women or girls, especially at a younger age, to see the benefits of technology and say, hey, this is the field I want to go into.
And I guess maybe role models will make a difference too. So you're actually a role model, and you appearing, in fact, kindly willing to appear in this podcast can make a difference.
Oh, I hope so. Because people, I believe people choose a career because, or a field because of a positive experience they've had by meeting someone.
Well, that's definitely you.
Oh, thank you.
So as a prominent leader, what were your greatest challenges, and how did you overcome them?
I'll do it from two perspectives. One is from the business side, and the other one is the work I'm doing with educators right now, but they kind of meld together. Because let's say as working in IT field is that you got to look at how do we meld or bring together IT solutions as not techie solutions, but as a business solution. And in working with companies, whether in or let's say working for them, is the IT departments were always separate, isolated entities from the overall business strategy and operation. And having worked in manufacturing engineering environments, I saw how technology can be maximized to benefit business operation, know how to calculate ROI, understand financial model to justify the use of technology. So the greatest challenge was always working with people from business to show them that technology can be used to solve a business problem, and you got to work with them to not just look at the techie point of view, but a business perspective. And then if we look at my present role now, is how do we meld education with technology and how to collaborate, get collaboration going with educators, nonprofit organization, government, and industry to really encourage youth to understand how technology works, to be creative, think out of the box, and get them to be, hey, you could be the next technology business person, which could be the next Bill Gates or Steve Jobs or whoever, and get educators to realize the benefits of technology. And we have to be patient because there is an education process to be shared. Bring resources to education that they don't have access to. And with a networking academy, that's one of the resources, but it has to be beyond that. We have to bring industry to them to say what's happening in the real world, and it's not just academics.
I see.
So how does technology make life better in the future?
Yeah, I guess that it's really important to bridge to the community out there and bridge to businesses and all the other kind of parts of the ecosystem so they realize it's not just sort of technology in isolation.
Yes, very much so. I think you summed that up quite well.
Well, again, you're this remarkable person. You got this great background. You're a prominent, internationally respected leader. And I think you're in a great spot to make predictions for the future. So can you do this and talk about their implications and how, IT professionals and business executives are going to be impacted?
It's looking at how the challenges is in technology is not the technology, but rather the people who are using it and who are implementing it. So education is very key because if the users and IT professionals can make technology work and understand the use of it, the positiveness of it, then the business will be a winner because technology brings added value to business. And while we're in the education, within the education world, we in industry have to advise educators that IT should not be taught in silos, but embraced by all different departments of an institution. So it's not just saying, hey, here's the IT program, but why isn't the construction program integrating technology into what they're teaching? Because technology is ubiquitous in all sectors, whether it's healthcare, finance, transportation, entertainment, retail, etc., manufacturing, construction, whatever. It's how do we get IT ingrained in every part of education programs so that people coming out embrace technology and say, hey, yes, this makes sense. Let's make it work, because they understand the value of it. And consequently, business wins in the end, because that's what's happening now. It's a global economy and it's a knowledge economy, and we have to maximize the use of technology.
So what do you see as the top challenges facing us today, and how do you propose they be solved?
Well, if I look at the three top, is the convergence and still the complexity of technology. So working from Cisco, we always talk about convergence because of IP telephony, like doing your phone calls over the Internet, whatever, and how do we maximize the use of Internet. But it is a complex technology. Yes, it can be set up and everything of that sort. And from a user perspective, it should be easy. And so that's an education process. And then the other part that is also challenges is globalization. It's getting people to realize you cannot just think, I'm just working in my city or my corner or my neck of the woods, that whatever you do to reach a greater market is not just locally, but it's on a global basis. And I believe Internet has opened that all up, but we have to, there's still people that have to make that a reality. And the other part is that there's another challenge is that there's not enough collaboration, is that organizations are still very silo-oriented. They're in their compartment, their cubicle, and they're not working enough together as a team to make projects be realized. Barriers shouldn't be broken. Barriers have to be broken down. Like, these aren't easy to solve, but it comes down to the change of attitudes and willingness to change to improve. And so it's a big change management process that has to be done to make these things happen.
I see. So those are some valuable kind of tips that you shared with us. Now, I've got this genius on the phone, and that's you. So we got an opportune moment. Now, I'm saying I've goofed. I haven't thought of the possible questions I could ask you. So let's turn the tables now. You ask yourself the questions that I should have asked and then provide the answers.
Okay. One thing I'd like to know is why aren't there more girls in the Western world going in IT programs? Because I remember talking to a professor in engineering, an engineering school in Montreal, and she was from Morocco originally. And she told me in Morocco, half of the engineering class are women. And when she came to Montreal to teach engineering, she was shocked. Of a class of 20, there was only two women. And she said, on top of it, those two women weren't from Canada. So how do we, in the Western world, it's not just Canada, but it's also in the States and, let's say, Western Europe, and how do we get more girls going into IT programs? And really right now, I don't have an answer for that. So I think we, as industry, have to work together with non-profit organizations like ICTC and everybody to figure out how do we tackle this together and how do we make that happen. And another question that I would like, how do we get more companies engaged so that post-secondary schools teaching IT programs or even, let's say, high schools teaching IT courses have more readily access to today's technology? It's not a matter of saying here's everything for free and everything that sort, but it's more of if teachers are teaching the students of the future in IT, they got to be able to use the technology of today. So how do we make that available? I don't have the magic solution for that either. And also, how do we encourage IT schools or IT teachers to continuously maintain professional development, so they're always up to date on technology? So those are challenges I think we're always faced with, not just in Canada, but around the world. And I don't have a magic bullet for that either. And the other one is, how do we address the IT workforce shortage in Canada? And I think some that's being addressed right now, and with the Association of Canadian Community Colleges and ICTC, with some innovative programs they're doing with immigration. But it's really how do we increase the the students that are also in Canada for them to look at IT careers?
I see. I mean, those are really valuable questions that you've asked. And, you know, I guess us as a community, we can look at trying to resolve those questions to provide solutions. Now, throughout this conversation, you mentioned ICTC, and maybe the audience may not be familiar with ICTC. Who is ICTC?
ICTC is a sector council at the Canadian level. They're funded by HRSDC, the federal government. It's a sector council on ICT, so it's on IT. And their mandate is, well, they got many, many things, is to represent industry to government to ensure certain standards, to address certain issues that are happening in the IT industry. And, like, one of them is, let's say, I know, like, very well, I've been reading up on your IFIP IP3 program on having a standard of IT workers, have standardization, professionalizing that the IT profession. So, like, this could also help to address the skills shortage, and also it allows IT worker mobility, because that means if an IT worker was educated, let's say, in Eastern Europe, but they have certain standardization that has been followed through, then we know, hey, we know they're of a certain caliber, they should be able to work here in Canada, and that kind of helps our workforce shortage. And they also work with, let's say, with the colleges for continuous professional development and everything of that sort.
I guess you advise ICTC, and I know I was talking to Dave O'Leary, who's the chair,
right, or
I guess now, or soon to be past chair of the National Council of IT Deans, and I guess you're sort of work on committees with him?
Yes, I do. And he's a fantastic, very dynamic individual who has a very good vision of looking at what can be done for the future, especially from a workforce perspective, and to work with the colleges across Canada and also with the ICT Sector Council. How do we bring that forward so that there is, let's say, a very skilled IT workforce in Canada so that we stay competitive in the global economy?
You know, it's a small world, and you sort of earlier mentioned about this sort of IFIP program. So can you share your additional views on this UN-founded International Federation for Information Processing and this program they launched this year called the International Professional Practice Partnership Program, or IP3, so IFIP IP3, on, you know, really creating a profession out of IT or professionalizing the profession. Are there some ideas or views you want to share on that?
Well, I find what's being done, it makes sense, and it's about time, and I hope it happens sooner than later. That from, because I look at, I'm part of the Order of Engineers, so you have a certain business ethics and standard of conduct that has to be done. And from an IT worker, it should be the same thing, because if technology is already very prevalent in our daily work and personal lives, is that when you have a professional IT worker, they should be upheld to a certain standard, no different than an engineer, a doctor, or a lawyer. And having these type of, the IP3 program makes just common sense. There should be global standardization, and that people who work in the IT field should be having those type of standardization. And also it helps with, as I mentioned earlier, with worker mobility, and also ensures the high quality and consistency of what IT can be brought to the business world. And also looking at it from a business aspect, it's not just techie, but also to look at the business and technology, how that brings it forth to make the economy a better, to make an economy more robust. And the other part, which is always very important, is that it encourages continuous professional development, because, as you know, technology is constantly changing. And as an IT professional, by adhering to these type of the IP3 program, then with the continuous professional development, you know you're getting someone of a high caliber standard, because they have to maintain their education.
Well, Joanne, I mean, we're really fortunate to have you come in today. I mean, I'm just thinking, we have this amazing professional who's taken the time out of her busy schedule to share her views with our audience and help sort of move us all to the next stage. So considering your schedule, we're very fortunate you came in today to do this interview. So thank you for sharing your genius with our audience.
Thank you very much, and I'm far from a genius. But thank you very much, and it's been a great pleasure.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Joanne Wong, internationally acclaimed technology leader and Cisco Network Academy Manager for Canada.
Thank you.